Hey, welcome in, Jaguars, today on this Tuesday. That means we're spending some quality time with Jeff Logman. By the way, happy birthday to one of the most key figures in Jaguar history. Morton Anderson turned 54 today.
Is that right?
And he did. Happy birthday to him. Him and Bobby Hebert share a birthday.
Bobby's probably one of the most interesting conversations you'll ever have.
You ever hear? I mean, just
love it.
He just does not have a governor on his mouth when he's on the radio.
Well, I mean, first and foremost, I mean, he's not afraid to speak his mind. But secondly, the accent, I love it. I feel like I'm watching Duck Commander.
Yeah,
you know, or Swamp People.
He is legit Cajun. There's no question about Bobby Hebert. But we're not here to talk about Bobby Hebert. We're going to talk plenty of Jags. But since we're on the subject.
Johnny Manziel.
Right. Brian Football, right, had his chance last night. He was miserable. I mean,
yeah, he was
miserable. But look, I understand your point. You cannot come in and act like you've done something in the league when you haven't done anything in the league. And even in college, you know, he carried himself with that air, but at least he had the hardware to back it up. He had done some things. He had gone into Alabama and was able to win in Tuscaloosa. He wins the Heisman Trophy, all that stuff. So he had some earned swagger. He hasn't earned. It's not just swagger. I mean, you're flipping guys off in the middle of the field. Stuff gets said, Jeff, I would imagine, on every single play
in
the National Football League.
Sure,
right?
Sure it does. And the most disappointing thing to me last night was Coach Mike Pettine's response to it in postgame. And he was asked specifically, would that action of Johnny flipping the bird impact his decision on who his starting quarterback is going to be? And he said no. Well, wait a minute. You're talking about the leader of your franchise, and you're saying that his actions on the field when the play is over don't impact your decision-making process? I was disappointed in Mike. I mean, me and Mike were roommates back in college. I know Mike very well.
You should call him up right now. Let's get him on the phone and read him the riot act.
Right? He was, you know, we went to Virginia. He was actually a year ahead of me, and his dad, C.B. West, you know, Central Bucks West, probably one of the greatest coaches in the history of the state of Pennsylvania. And a lot of people probably don't remember this, but they actually had a documentary series on ESPN or ESPN2 that followed Mike when he went to CB East, which was the rival high school. I think it was CB East, and I might have them mixed up. And they followed Mike in the season. Eventually, Mike and his dad squared off in the playoffs or at the end of the season, and that was kind of the culmination of the series. And Mike is a little wound up. You know, he's a little wound up as a coach. I think a lot of times he wasn't very respectful to his high school players, because I think you certainly treat high school players much differently than you do college players and professional athletes. But last night, I think that was not a good sign. If I'm Jimmy Haslam, I'm not real excited about that comment by my head coach.
I'm not excited either about the fact that, and I heard Jeff Prosser talk about this, maybe I'm naive as well. I kind of bought it. You know, you saw him in the process leading up. He was very respectful. He's like, look, I understand that I'm leaving a chapter of my life behind now, and it's going to be about being a professional, and I'm going to be all about football.
Yeah, but actions speak louder than
words.
Well,
clearly they do.
You know, I mean, he's coached up in that process, you know, and every action that he has throughout that process, from the conclusion of his college game to all the way up until the draft, I mean, everything is analyzed, and so they're all kind of looking at it, and a lot of people are going to believe it, you know, but the reality is that actions speak louder than words, and when he does certain actions throughout the course of years, that doesn't override what he does in the last two months don't override that.
We could see guys last night getting fired up going after Johnny Manziel from the defensive side. Was it Arakpo did the little money sign when he sacked him, whatever the case
may
be?
That's right.
Yep.
Are his teammates going to turn on him at some point?
Did you ever see his teammates after a scramble run over and rush over to pick him up?
Or to push guys away from him?
Never.
That kind of thing, yeah.
Never. Never. And that's not a good sign. I mean, a quarterback, and I compare that to I was watching the Oakland Raiders against the Cleveland Browns, or Oakland Raiders against the Detroit Lions in preparation for this week's game. Maurice Jones-Drew, you know, great guy, great teammate, because on game day, he's going to give you everything that he has, and he's all about team. And here's Maurice Jones-Drew that just, you know, goes to Oakland. It's his first year there, and we can talk about his performance at some point in the future. But the reaction to after every carry or touch that Maurice Jones-Drew had, you had guys running over to help him up off the ground. That's the sign that you want to have for your quarterback. Whereas when Johnny was on the field, you never saw any of that. You never saw anybody rushing over to protect him or pushing guys that may have gotten a borderline shot on Johnny. That's, to me, that's that right there would be the final factor in my decision making if I'm Mike Pettin, saying he's not ready to lead this team because he hasn't won over his teammates.
No, you can go back and watch the replay of the touchdown pass, the little short dump off to Deion Lewis in the middle. He goes down and scores from about 20 yards away. Deion scores and runs to the sideline. Right past Johnny Manziel.
Yep.
He's the only guy in that part of the field. He runs straight to the sideline to go celebrate with his position group over there. Runs right by the quarterback who just threw him the touchdown.
And I think that has a lot to do with kind of where this football team is at here. You know, everybody is like, okay, let's, you know, Pete Prisco's one of them. He's like, come on, man, just play Blake Bortles.
Play the kid, I believe is the trademarked expression.
And you have to see the signs that the team is ready to accept him to be the leader of the football team before you end up making that decision. And the signs are like what we're talking about with Johnny. The signs aren't there for Johnny. And you want to see the signs continuously with a young quarterback that the team is ready to accept him. If they're not ready to accept him, he's not ready to lead.
Now, clearly the team has rallied around the concept of Chad Henne as a starting quarterback. You see that all throughout the summer, I think. That's evidenced by the way he interacts with his teammates on the practice field. Do you see that with Blake? I mean, I'm not saying that they're ready to accept him over Chad Henne, but do you see that kind of acceptance? Like, this is a guy that ultimately is going to.
Well,
you see it and you hear it.
You see it and you hear it because and I go back to preseason game number one when Rick Blue was interviewing Mercedes Lewis and he was talking. The question was asked about Blake Bortles and he says, you know, his demeanor. There's something about his demeanor and he used the word dope, and you know, which is I guess.
That's good.
Hipster for good stuff, you know, okay?
I don't know if hipster, right? Yes, but yes.
But I mean, when you hear comments like that, and then you see the reaction of teammates when he does make a positive play, when he comes off the sideline and his teammates are greeting him, slapping him on the butt, giving him a tap on the helmet. I mean, those are all the signs that you look for. And a lot of people don't even think about evaluating that. You have to evaluate that when you're talking about the quarterback position.
Yeah, you know, I talked to Mercedes just yesterday, for a conversation for the pregame show coming up this week. And the way he put it this time was, you know, he had a lot of complimentary things to say about Chad as well, but when specifically asked about Blake, he said he's a better person than he is a player. And he didn't mean like, golly gee, he's just such a great, you know, he just meant.
Yeah, he's not Walter Cleaver.
Right. No, he's saying he's a guy that you want to be a teammate with, a guy you want to follow, a guy that, you know, instills those kind of things in his teammates.
Yeah. And that's what you're looking for. I mean, that's exactly what you're looking for is a guy that on game day, when he gets up in front of the huddle, and I don't know if you happen to see the mic'd up segment on Jaguars.com when Blake Bortles was mic'd up for the Tampa Bay game. I mean, you could just tell his calm in the huddle, you know, making comments about other things that were away from the game. I mean, that's exactly what you're looking for in a quarterback is a guy that the game doesn't have him in a tense mode. You know, he's relaxed. He's having fun, you know, because ultimately the game of football has to come down to a passion and an enjoyment on game day. You know, I've always said this. You know, I always got paid to practice and I got paid to work out in the off season, and the games are free.
Right.
You know, and that's the attitude that you have to have as a quarterback, and you can tell that Blake has some of that element.
They still call it a game check, though, every week.
Well, it's a game check, and I never call it a game check. I just call it a practice check.
Right on. You know? I got you. I hear you, man. And I think probably a lot of people, a lot of players probably feel that way. That's the part that, come on.
Those are the guys that you're after. I mean, the guys that, you know that all the other stuff, all the other BS, the practice, the meetings and the grind, it's all necessary. And even though it's not really a grind anymore for these guys, I mean, it's a little bit better. But all of that stuff is the necessary evil so that you can have fun on game day, because the game day to me is the ultimate release.
All right. If you're a Jaguar fan and you're listening to Jaguars Today right now, and you're not fired up, listen to Jeff Loggeman, get fired up, then you probably don't have a pulse. It's almost football season. We got Loggy, who I came off the practice field yesterday watching. Can't tell you what I saw. But I did watch every snap of practice yesterday. We do know that Blake got very few reps with the ones because Gus told us that, so we're allowed to tell you that. But Loggy was in there grinding on film.
That's why I at this time of year, you know, look, you're allowed to report what you see in basically stride and stretch of practice. And then after that, you're allowed to watch. And I don't want to go because you watch so much on game film that after a while, you get worried that maybe you confuse what you've seen on the practice field and what you already know. And you don't want to confuse the two. So my thing is, look, don't even get confused.
Right. That way it won't leak out accidentally.
Yeah. I don't want to make any mistakes. I don't want to make any mistakes and say something that was on the practice field that I saw on game film. You know, so I just say, no, I won't go to practice. I don't need to go to practice because to me, the ultimate grade anyway is game film.
The film, which you were watching, for the last couple days. We'll talk to you about what you saw from preseason game two, what we can anticipate in terms of position battles. 641-1010. Phone lines are open to you. You got Jeff Loggeman. What a tremendous resource. Hi, Jeff, by the way.
Hi, Mike.
It's a little late.
I'll take it.
And
I got a hi from you a while ago. So
right, well, when you all walked good. In, but from now on, I'll say hi to you first thing on the air. I'm a little scared, Tony. He is ready to go. We're just this close to the start of the regular season. Jeff Loggeman is here with us. So is Fat Tony. I'm Mike Dempsey. Lauren Brooks back in the studio. It's Jaguars today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
Yeah, it's tough, but, you know, the guys are competing, they're doing a really good job, and, you know, you definitely want that camaraderie and the bond between you and the center, but at the same time, you know, guys are stepping up and doing some really good things there.
Chad Henne, talking about the need to build that chemistry between quarterback and center, has nothing to do with the song, which is Toby Keith, Get Drunk and Be Somebody. Lauren likes to go with a thematic music approach.
Yeah.
Is this something to do with Johnny Manziel? Lauren is my first guest.
Nope.
Okay. There you go. Get drunk and be somebody, Tony. You got anything?
No.
Okay. We'll have to find out.
That's what Jaguar fans did after Morton Anderson missed that field goal.
Bah. Good try, but no.
No.
No. Okay. I didn't think so. Thought that, I don't know. She was pretty obvious yesterday despite the fact that I couldn't get it. We'll see when song number two pops up. Jeff, first thing I asked you on Friday morning when I saw you get back from the game in Chicago was, how did Mike Brewster play? How did the centers play? You said, I'm not going to say a word until I watch the film. And you watched the film, and I caught up with you briefly after the show, and you said you thought they all played pretty good.
Yeah, they played okay.
Right. No, nothing that stood out like a sore thumb.
There was definitely a pecking order as far as performance. I thought Brewster played okay.
Okay.
You know, the first game, you know, he had the errant snaps. This past week, he had a false start and then got beat really bad on a one-on-one pass rush by a guy, Paya, a nose tackle that's not exactly a dominant pass rusher.
No, he's really just a plugger.
Yeah, I mean, it was a good pass rush move. I give the guy credit. But, I mean, that's something that, you know, as a center, you can't have happen. You know, immediate pressure right up the gut on a quarterback, that's not a good thing. You know, so if I had to rank them, I would probably put Bowanko 1, Linder really close 2nd, and then Brewster 3rd.
The issue, obviously, is
after just that performance in
right,
Chicago.
Right, just that, right, yeah. Exactly. And that's what we're talking about right now. That Linder, we feel, I mean, just observers, I say we, people who've been out of practice a lot, feel like, you know, he's playing well. He's probably going to have that right guard spot.
He could start anywhere. I mean, you could make an argument that he's the best of the three interior players, period. And I'm talking even putting Zane Beadles in there. I mean, that's how good that Brandon Linder has been so far. Now, that's just off of the point of analyzing when they've been here. Now, I'm not taking into account what Zane Beadles did before because,
sure.
I mean, in the decision process, that has to be a factor. But what you've evaluated in the game, Brandon Linder has only played one preseason game. Then that one preseason game, you would say he's been the best interior player for the Jaguars so far.
Now, if you're building a team, right, is it easier to find a guy that you can plug in and play guard? I mean, maybe ultimately when Bolanco's healthy, the situation resolves itself or that competition
maybe
picks back up. But as of right now, based on the guys who are healthy, what do you think the best combination is center-right guard at this moment?
It's a great question, and I know that evaluation process is continuing to go on for David Caldwell and Gus Bradley and Luke Butkus. I mean, that's the most important question going into preseason game number 3. To me, Linder is clearly, he's got to play somewhere and he's going to play somewhere, whether it be at center or guard. I think a lot of that's going to depend on Jock McClendon's performance this week at center. And is he supposed to start this week?
He took the reps on Sunday, which was an open practice, so we can talk about that. He took the first team reps at center on Sunday.
I was kind of surprised that he didn't take any snaps this past week at center, But I think that's, they really wanted to get a really good look at Bowanko.
Right.
And I think he showed them some stuff.
And you think, I mean, just really, I mean, he's a guy that, I don't want to say just a throw-in, but people, you know, they pick up the extra pick for Gabbert, and nobody knew much about Luke Bowanko coming in, and, you know, he wasn't a high draft pick. Even though Storm Johnson was picked later, he's flashier. We've seen him run the football at UCF. So he's kind of the mystery man, I think, in this draft.
Well, he's scrappy. He has great athleticism. He gets to the second level, the linebackers, very well. Is he powerful enough to be a dominant player in the inside? Not yet. Could he be eventually that? Possibly. But the signs that you saw in Chicago with extended playing time with the ones, I think he might have earned the opportunity to get even more playing time this week if he were healthy.
Right.
You know, I would have not have been surprised if this week, if Bowanko came out of that game healthy, to where they just went ahead and say, let's start him and see how he does.
Start him at center, start Linder at right guard.
Yeah, and let's see how it looks.
Right.
You know, and then make an adjustment after that to evaluate other combinations. The interesting thing to me in this whole process of center and right guard is you've seen Jacques McClendon play right guard, and you've seen Jacques McClendon play center. You've seen Brandon Linder play right guard, and you've seen him play center. Have you seen Mike Brewster play center, right guard, or anywhere else?
He plays center.
He plays center. So in my mind, that's telling me that he has to make this football team as a starting center. If he's not the starting center, he may not make this football team.
Because he doesn't have enough versatility.
Well, he's got versatility because he's done it before.
But can he play to a high level?
But where's the ceiling at?
Right, that's what I'm saying. I mean, yeah, he could do. You could play a lot of things. He could go kick, too.
Look, they're not building this football team for 2014. They're building this football team for 2015 and 2016 and 2017 and 2018. You know, so as part of the process, if I'm the general manager, I've got to look at guys and go, where's the ceiling on this guy? Where's the ceiling on this guy? I mean, that's where you're ultimately looking at. You're not looking at now. You're looking at in the years ahead. You know, I think Mike Brewster has a relatively low ceiling compared to Luke Bowanko, Brandon Linder. Jock McClendon's probably, you know, a little bit better than Mike Brewster. The flexibility, he's got a little, what I call short area power, which is much better than Mike Brewster, probably not the awareness and the experience at playing the position.
And you've talked about in this division, particularly you're going to see a lot of 3-4 fronts, you're going to have a big, powerful guy right up on top.
Right on the nose.
Yeah.
You know, and that's where Mike Brewster has struggled the most. If Mike Brewster could play the game, and look, I'm not trying to criticize Mike Brewster, I'm just trying to tell you what I see. If Mike Brewster could play against a 4-3 and not have a covered nose on him or a big, dominant type of player, I think he would do just fine. Because I think he's aware, he's got experience, he's got enough athleticism to get to the second level, he can pull. But if he has to block a guy who's a big, strong guy on his nose and reach what I call a shade technique or a one technique, which is a guy tilted to one side or the other of him, and he has to reach that guy, he's going to struggle.
Baselli pointed out a particular play. It sounds like exactly what you're talking about with Linder playing center in that play.
Reached, you know, the heck out of the guy, right, and the guy was right, stonewalled at 3 yards away.
Right, and he drove him back, and I think he put him on his back.
He got a pancake in the game.
Yeah,
he got a, well, that was a different one, but he got a pancake in the game, and then he reached a one technique. So he had to, I mean, as a defensive lineman, when you're in what I call a shade technique, you're an outside shoulder technique, you never get reached. I mean, your alignment gives you the advantage. If you do get reached, you feel like you're a dummy. Because it should never happen. Well, Linder reaches a one, the shaded side of it, and literally at 4 steps, the guy had completely stopped because Linder had gotten the position and the arms positioned, the feet positioned, and the guy couldn't even pursue to run the play. Mike Brewster can't do that.
Gotcha. Jeff Logman here with us. It's Jaguars Today. If you want to tweet the program, at MD_1010XL, at 1010XL, Fat Tony, at 1010XL, Lauren. Let's go to the phones for the first time today. If you want to talk with Logs, you can do that every Tuesday here on Jaguars Today. Jason is up first at 641-1010. Hi, Jason. How are you?
Good morning, fellas. Yeah, I just wanted to bring up 3 guys, which y'all have all been talking about while I was on hold, but with Bowanko, I wanted Jeff just to kind of talk about it if he can, or both of you. But what is the struggles or what's the challenges for a rookie playing center? Because I know they have to make a lot of line calls. But I know Blanco's smart enough because he went to Virginia, Jeff. So, there was two other guys. Cam Bradfield seems like now he's got to play right tackle, which it seems like he plays better on the left. When he was put at right, he never looked too good to me a couple years ago. Then he played left last year, and it was like you never heard from him, so he must have done pretty well. And I called wanting some of the other guys to ask you, Jeff, just to touch on the current situation with Drew Nowak and why we just don't hear him mentioned in any of these battles. But thanks, guys.
Well, you don't hear anything about Drew Nowak because he's playing well. I mean, really. I mean, he's been a left guard and all throughout training camp. I'm kind of surprised that they haven't let him slide over and play a little bit of right guard. But he's been very solid. I think they like him. You got to remember, too, that Drew Nowak was playing defensive line in college.
Right.
You know, made the switch a couple years ago. So there's another example of where's the ceiling at. He's big. He's powerful. Okay, and he's playing pretty well. Oh, he's only played offensive guard for like 2 years. So you're saying the ceiling is higher on him. So in 2015 and 2016, we think he's going to be a better player.
Do you think the coaching staff feels that way?
I think they like him.
You've talked about it.
I like Drew Nowak.
Yeah, I know you do.
I think that he still needs to learn some of the nuances of playing offensive line, keeping his feet flatter, keeping all of his cleats in the ground, taking more power steps as opposed to running steps, which a defensive lineman does versus an offensive lineman. But I like him. And he has been the mainstay backup left guard all along. Now, Cam Bradfield, he's a little bit more probably suited to play left tackle than right tackle because, you know, you'd want to have the right tackle be more of a big mauler. You know, but, hey, look, you know, backup offensive lineman, you want a guy that can play multiple positions. Cam can do that. He's gotten better in about the last 2 weeks. First to start out camp, he didn't look very good. But I think he's going to be fine at right tackle until Austin Pasdor gets back. You know, you'd like to have him play the game with a little more oomph. You know, but a lot of times when you get the oomph, you lose the ability of athleticism and pass protection sometimes. You know, sometimes there is a trade-off with an offensive tackle.
Yeah, if you got it all, that's when
you got it all, that's when you know, that's when you're Tony Boselli.
Right.
You know.
What about rookies playing center? Just the challenges of all those other things beyond the physical aspect of it.
Well, I think that Bowenko can handle it, and the one sign that I did like is that during the game, it never seemed too big for him. You never saw anything slow down in that up-tempo process because they ran really good tempo when Chad Henne was in at quarterback. And you got to remember that Bowenko was a big part of that. You know, he not only had to go in for Brewster when he had an equipment issue, and then he was reinserted back in for his regular rotation with Chad Henne, and the tempo never slowed one bit. And that's what they're after. So he's done a good job. And then when Brandon Linder moved from right guard to center and Bowenko from center to right guard, you could tell that Bowenko was helping Linder out with some of the calls. That's a good sign. It means that it's, you know, he's capable of handling that. You know, so I like Bowenko. I believe he's still another year or two away from being a guy that you say, hey, he could be our guy, and we feel really good about him. You know, a year of getting stronger, more experience. But he's got the athleticism, and that's what you got to have to start with.
You know, it sounds to me like, really, you look at these first couple of draft classes, not many things you can point to as outright misses. You know, even with Bowenko, who's kind of a complete unknown to a lot of folks here in this fan base, who is this guy? It may not be a guy that, like you said, immediately makes an impact on this football team. Maybe he does, but that you can see the building process. You're not expecting a sixth-round pick to come in and dominate right away, but do you have that eye? Does Dave Caldwell have the eye that can project 2 years down the road? And, I mean, really, when you talk about the way Linder's playing, they targeted him, they traded up. Same thing with Allen Robinson, and you saw in the brief glimpses, wow, did he look like the real deal? Dave Caldwell, not doing anything
doing
to shake
job.
Your confidence right
no,
now.
No, he's doing a good job so far. I mean, that's... the draft is the lifeblood of a franchise. You know, you can dabble in free agency. Sometimes you're going to hit. Sometimes you're going to miss. You know, and when you're looking at college players, I mean, you can't afford to miss many. Otherwise, you're not heading up. You know, you're heading down. And it seems to me that it's been very good so far. And, you know, I think Denard Robinson is a perfect example, and he was our guest last night on Jaguars All Access. And last year he comes in, they give him the offensive weapon designation. He played running back at Michigan. He can't catch anything. Well, we were sitting there going, this is not going to work. I mean, if the guy's going to be a weapon, you got to catch the ball, right? Well, in college, he had the nerve damage, which is why he went from quarterback to running back or offensive weapon. And was talking to Denard last night, and he said that his pinky and his ring finger, last year, he couldn't even move them. I mean, so, and I know that this is
ready. Catching three fingers.
No, yeah, he was catching it with his, you know, his thumb, his pointing finger, and the next finger over.
Johnny's finger.
Yeah. Johnny's finger. You know, and I didn't know that. But Dave Caldwell and them were aware of that. And so they said, okay, hey, look, you know, here's a guy that was a great athlete in college. We know he's probably not going to play quarterback, but if, you know, he's a late round pick, we give him time to develop and that nerve eventually starts to heal. What's happened? So, I mean, clearly they've got a vision.
Right.
And clearly they understand what the projection is down the road because, you know, and I'm showing you a kind of, I mean, when you have a pinky finger and a ring finger, literally he said to me last night, they could not move. So he's trying to catch the ball like this, okay?
With those two fingers kind of jutting out.
Jutting back towards the palm. And I said, well, how is it now? And he showed it to me, and he's like, look, it works.
Yeah, and that's why he hasn't dropped.
Now he's catching everything.
Right, he's catching pretty much everything thrown his
way. And I'm not saying he's going to be a great player. I'm just saying that that's what you have to do when you're Dave Caldwell.
School opened yesterday for my son. I'm in class right now with Jeff Logman, as are the rest of you. The fan feedback spotlight today brought to you by the Tom Bush family of dealerships, asking Jaguar fans what drives you. Simply today, Toby Gerhart, what is the upside for him? How many yards, how many touchdowns are you expecting out of the Jaguars' workhorse running back this year? You can share your thoughts on the Facebook page, facebook.com/Jaguars Today. Tweet me at MD_1010XL. Tweet at 1010XL Fat Tony and at 1010XL Lauren. 641-1010. Phone lines remain open. Jeff Loggeman in. It's Jaguars Today on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
The speed of the game, it was good for him. He had, what, three reps in one period. Huzz made a play on one, and as I was sitting back there, I thought it was really good for him to go against the ones like that, to get a feel for the speed, to get a feel for the rush. I just felt like that was good for him.
Gus Bradley talking about the limited reps that Blake Bortles took yesterday, and went on to say in his comments that he also got another handful in 7-on-7. But in terms of 11-on-11, he told us he was going to get some work with the first team. Three reps is what it turned out to be yesterday. Probably similar as we go along today, Jeff. And look, they've not wavered from Chad Henne opening the season, at least as a starter, that he's a starting quarterback. And this is further confirmation of that in my mind. I asked Ryan O'Halloran about this yesterday. Is there anything, any circumstance other than injury that could just really make the conversation legitimate as to who the starting quarterback is to open the season based on what could happen in week three of the preseason? Or is the book closed, Chad Henne's the guy, regardless of what we see on the field this Friday?
I think the book's closed.
Okay.
You know, look, have you ever made the mistake of letting a quarterback sit back and learn for a little longer? Or have you made the mistake of putting a guy in there maybe before he was ready? You know, the mistake is always made, putting a guy in there too early. You don't ever make a mistake by letting him sit back and learn for a little longer.
I've heard people speculate or outright state that you can't ruin a quarterback who never had it. You know what I mean? Like, that it wasn't rushing Blaine Gabbert in that ruined him. It was Blaine Gabbert was, didn't matter how you treat it, he was going to be the same guy. Okay.
Maybe. Okay. You don't know that.
Well, that's what I'm asking you, your opinion on that.
I think that when a quarterback comes out, a lot of it is dependent upon, is he mentally strong enough to be able to withstand some of the bumps and bruises along the way? Some guys are built to handle it. Some aren't. Some learn more, and then that way they don't have to withstand as much. You know, I think that anybody can benefit from sitting back and learning for a longer period of time. And I know that the learning curve is faster the more you play, because game repetitions, I always said, are worth like three reps in practice. You know, so would Blaine Gabbert have been better if he had been able to sit back and learn? I don't think there's any doubt, you know, because he came from a system that was not a pro-style system. He did not have any benefit of an offseason. You had the lockout. He had nothing to learn from. And then when Jack Del Rio inserted him into the starting lineup, he was not ready. I thought that last year, I thought they mishandled the situation last year. He had an excellent game in New York against the Jets, and then had the hand issue, and put him back in there against Kansas City, and the hand wasn't ready. I mean, you could tell in practice prior to Kansas City he wasn't ready to go because he wasn't taking all the snaps. Look, I'm not a Blaine Gabbert apologist. He performed terribly. But could it have been different? Maybe. Maybe it had.
Can you reclaim those guys? I mean, or is there a point where, and maybe it's just different for every individual.
I think you can reclaim guys like that.
You can. You don't ruin them. You don't shell shock them.
Well, I think it definitely impacts them. You know, and I think the ones that are strong will be able to fight through it and come back. I mean, look, there's other guys. Trent Dilfer. Trent Dilfer was terrible in Tampa Bay. And then he goes on and wins the Super Bowl in Baltimore because they kind of realized what he was, and he ended up having one hell of a defense to win a Super Bowl.
He had a hell of a defense.
You know, so I'm not saying that Blaine Gabbert is ever going to be a starting caliber quarterback, but, you know, maybe he ends up getting better. And if he gets the right coach, you know, there's coaches and there's been examples that guys have been reclaimed. I mean, Jim Plunkett. Look at Jim Plunkett. When Jim Plunkett was with New England, he was cast off. Goes to the Raiders. He was reclaimed.
Rich Gannon was a journeyman.
Rich
became NFL MVP.
Another perfect example.
Yeah.
You know, so it is possible. Now, is it likely?
Right, obviously. Those examples you know, are few and far between, but odds are it's going to be a long uphill climb. By the way, CCR, Run Through the Jungle. Duh. Toby, Keith, Run Through the Jungle. I'm going to go with your Toby Gerhardt theme today, Lauren Brooks.
Well done. I knew you could do it.
Shame on me for not... figuring out the obvious. I always go with the song rather than the artist, so that's what we got right there. 641-1010 if you'd like to get in, if you want to talk about the QB situation or any aspect of the Jags. As Jeff Logman's seen it all on tape, I got to tell you guys, I got challenged, did the ALS Ice Bucket Challenge. A couple people challenged me to it, right?
Mm-hmm.
So yesterday I'm driving home, and I'm thinking through the logistics. I've got a little swing set in the backyard. I'm going to have my son dump the bucket on my head. As I'm going along, something, I don't know what it was, on the road, right? And rather than swerve into another lane of traffic, bit it right with my left front tire, blowout right there on the highway. So there I'm on 95s. You don't realize how hot it is until you're changing a tire on 95.
I had that issue a couple weeks ago.
Right, with everybody just whipping past you. And Trooper came up behind me, really nice, you know, and he came up, just made sure everything was okay. And I'm like, yeah, thanks, he said. I'm going to go up to the next exit. I'll come back and check, see if you're... all good, but by the time he did, I was gone. So head over. I went down a Discount Tire at 16 and 95. Not an advertiser, just couldn't have been nicer people. And was telling you, they really hooked me up. They helped me out a lot. So anyway, I get home, and I'm going to have my wife film this on the iPad. And by the way, I challenged Fat Tony. He knew that it was coming. I challenged Ryan O'Halloran. He knew it was coming.
Mm-hmm.
I challenged Frangie. I don't know if you know this about Frank, Jeff. There's not a human being who likes a single drop of water to touch his hair less than Frank Frangie, unless he's in the shower.
He's got a little Jimmy Johnson in him, huh?
Oh, my. A little. Jimmy Johnson's got a little Frank Frangie in him. Seriously. All right. And to the idea.
Hi, listen to me.
Dump in a bucket. Huh? Are you there? Is that him? What was that?
Listen to me, okay?
Yeah.
Just happened to be stopping by the studio here.
Yeah, right? Oh, did you?
Yeah, I just.
Do you accept the challenge?
I absolutely accept it. Logan, listen to me. Dempsey doesn't like me getting my hair, not getting my hair wet because he doesn't have any. All right, so
I choose okay. not to
okay.
have hair.
So there's that. I'm going to do this challenge, right? But I've got to find a way. Did you see Dempsey's challenge? Did you really do it three times, by the way?
Three times. I was about to tell. Yeah, I did it three times. Okay. I'll tell the whole story here in a second.
Okay, I only moderately believe that, but Dempsey got his son to do it, okay? So I thought he'd go easy on him. He crushed you, bro. That was fantastic.
There were giant chunks of ice.
That was awesome.
Me in the skull.
That was awesome.
So, I think I had pneumonia and several concussions yesterday that I'm dealing with.
But, Jeff, have you done it yet, Jeff?
No, I'll just write a check.
Okay.
You can't do that, Frank.
I'm not going to do it. I'm thinking of people I can challenge. So Logman gets on the list, and so they right. He'll write the check. All right, boys, just saying hello, but yeah, I don't want my hair wet, but I'll figure it out. Probably do it within the next week. How about that?
Thanks for stopping by. You're supposed to be within 24 hours, but we'll take the next week as long as there's video evidence of that.
Hey, let me throw this out there real quick. Chicago was Frank's game number two as the play-by-play
yes.
guy, and he did a fantastic job.
Yeah, I thought so, too.
Yeah,
I
fantastic.
Thought so, too.
Big improvement from game one to the game two, and I look forward to, you know, continuing that trend.
I look at, and I thought that was reflected in some – you know, look, we all know when there's a change like that, people are going to be skeptical, you know.
Yeah,
and
it takes a while to find a rhythm and learn how people breathe and how they talk and all that. And I thought he did a fantastic job.
I had a lot of people who told me that they were skeptical about the whole switchover, period, and that they had to grudgingly admit the same thing. And yeah, whether it's grudgingly or not, I'm glad they did.
I was proud of them. It felt good.
So yesterday, I stopped by, and I've got the blowout, get the tire done. All right, I'm all good. I'm on the way home. I pick up the bag of ice, and I crack about half of that thing into a bucket, take out some of the bigger chunks. You know, I don't want to break my skull wide open. And, you know, pour enough water in there. We even did a test pour so we'd see where it was going to land, so I knew where to stand. Did the whole spiel. My wife's filming it, and at the end, this is really my fault. She just keeps filming it, and like she's got the grass. When it's done, you know, she's like pointing down at the grass. Is this thing on? And I'm like, no, all right, we got to edit this out. But instead of chopping the back end off, I chopped the main part out. So really my bad. Okay. Now Lauren had warned me, don't wear a white shirt. Good call. Right. Yeah, nobody needs to see me in a white shirt.
You and Ryan O'Halloran don't need to wear a white shirt.
So I got my black Jaguars Today shirt on. So now I'm soaked. Come inside. I mess up the edit. It's gone. I can't retrieve it. Got to do this bad boy again. Go get black shirt number two. Go outside. My wife's like, just press a red button, right? I'm like, I've got it all set up. Don't touch. Just press the red button. So we go along. I come inside. She has taken 7 still photos of me. There's no video whatsoever. And now, I mean, I really think I might have pneumonia now. There's no ice left in the bag. Okay? So we got to go to the trays, and we empty every ice tray, all the big cubes, put it in the bucket.
Chunky ones.
I got one black shirt left. This better work. And we go out there, and my son, he was having the time of his life, man.
He thinks he's great.
He got me 3 times.
Hell yeah,
you know?
Love
so, yeah, big ice cubes bouncing off the top of my skull. That was my
All right, now let me ask you this.
Yes.
Okay, through this whole process, the original challenge was designed to raise money and awareness for ALS.
Correct, which it's done.
And, well, it has no question. And if you did not do the ice bucket challenge, then you were supposed to donate money to ALS.
Which I'm going to do anyway.
Good, because I don't want people doing or participating in this for self-promotion.
No. You don't do it. I'm going to give $100, which the challenge is like, I think if you do it, you're supposed to donate $10, and if you don't do it, you're challenged to donate $100 to ALS. Okay. So I'm going to donate the $100 anyway.
Yeah, but you know, I mean, for anybody that does it to make their own video and then donate $10 to get out of paying an additional $90,
it was fun to do the video, and it's fun to challenge people to do it. But when you see, the first week, I think their donations increased tenfold from the same period last year. So it's goofy, and I'm sure there is some self-promotion going on with it.
But I mean, even if there is self-promotion, it's still promoting the fact of raising awareness and money for ALS.
And I even said that in the video. I'm going to make a donation anyway, but I'm going to do the video because I've been challenged to do it.
Good. So. Now everybody that you challenge, make sure they follow up with doing the same exact thing.
Talk to this guy right here.
Okay. Tony,
absolutely.
Frank,
Deep
you know, Ryan Randy. O'Halloran, you know, all you cheap
suckers.
I
don't know how much those newspaper guys make now.
They make enough, I can tell you that.
All right, they do. All right, let's take a timeout. Halfway through with Jeff Loggeman. Get on board. 641-1010. We'll talk more Jags. What did he see on the film? And what does Jeff want to see from this Jaguar team as they head up to Detroit for preseason week number 3? Mike Dempsey, Jeff Loggeman, Fat Tony. It's Jaguars Today on 1010 XL, 92.5 FM.
Jaguars Today from the Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute studios at Everbank Field. Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute, sports medicine provider for the Jacksonville Jaguars, Jacksonville Sharks, and Jacksonville University. If you bleed teal and black, then welcome home. Jaguars Today on 1010 XL, 92.5 FM.
When your AC is broken and the heat is on, call AvalonAC.com. 904-245-1818. These guys are great. AvalonAC.com. AvalonAC.com.
And now, this date in football history.
All right, this date in football history brought to you by Dr. James McCall's Comprehensive and Cosmetic Dentistry. Noted earlier that it was a pair of birthdays today, both born in 1960. Bobby Hebert, former Saints and Falcons quarterback, and Morton Anderson, one of the pivotal figures in Jaguar team history.
Will always be revered.
He will always be revered. What a great, I mean, the moment
I remember that play like it was yesterday because, you know, I was actually not on the field goal block unit. And so I went to Larry Pasquale and kind of grabbed him by the collar and said, I'm going out there, so you better find somebody to pick off. and thought, you know, if I had, I wish I had to play one more time because I thought I had a chance of blocking it.
Yeah, have you heard Curtis the Cat, Jackson and Bill, talk about that play? He was shaking the goalpost. Literally, underneath, in the timeout, before the
Yeah, he was banging his head against the goalpost out of frustration that this is what's going to cost them a chance to go to the playoffs.
And it was moving, right? And he thought, for the life of him, that they were going to throw a flag on him and that they were going to re-kick it. And, I mean, could you imagine? He was like, I was already packing up my stuff and all this stuff, and obviously didn't come to pass.
No, it was a great moment, and I ended up getting cut, the guard. Ended up kind of diving down at the legs, and if I just anticipated that and jumped over it, I would have loved to
have
it could have
been
an opportunity.
Blocking it.
That would have been amazing, right?
Oh, we wouldn't have been able to have you here. You would have been too big for Jaguars today.
Would have been cool, but, you know, then the roar of the crowd, you know, came, and you were like, oh, my God, he missed it.
You couldn't believe it. Where were you? Were you, like, facing?
Never saw it. I couldn't see it. I'm on the ground, so I didn't see it. So you just reacted off of what the crowd said.
Wow.
You know, and then all of a sudden you hear this, you know, the crowd going nuts, and you're like, yeah.
Was it better than that? I mean, nothing can happen in those next couple of games unless you win that game, unless that moment happens.
Right. Then you don't have the magic in Buffalo or the magic in Denver. No.
But did it still, despite that, the moments got bigger, right? I mean, did it felt better each week, or did it ever quite capture that one singular moment of, man, we're in the playoffs?
No, I mean, the game, I can tell you, the next 2 weeks were fantastic. They were even better than that, you know, and mainly because when we got in, it's amazing how Tom Coughlin's demeanor changed, because he went from being terrible Tom to joyous Tom. And it was the most incredible transition I've ever seen him make, ever.
Really?
In the 4 years that I was able to spend with him. Because when we got to the playoffs, I mean, look, he was like, hey, look, we're here having fun. Nobody's expecting us to do anything. It's kind of us against everybody else who doesn't respect us. And it was fun. I mean, it was probably the first time in 2 years that you enjoyed coming to work and enjoyed sitting in his meetings, because his demeanor had changed. And I'm just sitting there going, where's this guy been for 2 years, you know?
He's gripping.
And it was fun because, you know, that, you know, of course, you know, you get paid extra in the playoffs, but that's not what it's about. I mean, the money's good in the playoffs, but you're playing to advance. And the disappointment in New England did not overshadow the great memories of Denver and Buffalo.
And like you said earlier, you didn't get paid for those playoff games. You got paid to practice those weeks.
That's exactly right.
You played those games for free. This date in 2002, John Madden debuted on Monday Night Football. You were telling us on the break you thought he was the best big picture analyst you've ever seen.
By far. I think he had a great grasp of understanding where the game was at, how the flow of a game went. When I say at first point there about how the game, where it was at, I'm talking about the league as a whole and the game as a whole, league-wide. And during the course of a game, excellent big-picture analyst as far as how the game was going, the critical keys to the game. Now, his individual play breakdown was not always the strongest. Sometimes he kind of got lost. But I have great amount of respect for John Madden. He's got a great delivery. Him and Pat Summerall were simply magic together. Magic. I mean, when you heard those two voices, you knew it was a big game.
Football was on. And right. It was a big game. This date in football history presented by Dr. James McCall's Comprehensive and Cosmetic Dentistry. If you need the Stop Snoring Mouth Guard, oh, my goodness, your spouse needs you to get it. Pick it up by calling 620-9225. They are a certified Invisalign provider, and you get 10% off all first-time customer initial visits, whether you're in the market for a family dentist or you need cosmetic work done. Visit jamesjmccall.com for a complete list of comprehensive care services, or call 620-9225 for Dr. McCall's Comprehensive and Cosmetic Dentistry. That is this date in football history.
Now the Honda Drive around the NFL, brought to you by your First Coast Honda dealers.
Quick look around the NFL at some other pieces of news and notes. The Arizona Cardinals will be without defensive tackle Darnell Dockett for the entire 2014 season. Dockett tore his ACL during practice yesterday. According to the team, he will require season-ending surgery. Patriots tight end Rob Gronkowski had surgery to repair a torn ACL in January. Yesterday, Gronk was able to participate in 11-on-11 team drills at Patriots practice for the first time. Gronk has said that he wants to be able to play in all 16 games this season. And finally, Phil Simms and Tony Dungy have come out and said that they will try and avoid using the word Redskins when referring to the Washington NFL franchise during broadcasts. Jim Nance, who is the broadcast partner of Phil Simms, has said that he will not avoid the name, stating that he doesn't believe it is his job to take a stance. ESPN, the four-letter network, has come out and said that, quote, we use the marks and nicknames as utilized by the teams, leagues, and conferences we cover. So ESPN will continue to refer to them as the Washington Redskins.
What do you think about that, Loggy? You got the Redskins, Washington, however you want to phrase it now, in week two. What's your whole feeling on that situation?
I mean, I grew up a Redskins fan, you know, and I don't know of any Redskins fan that ever attached a demeaning term or position based on that word. You know, I kind of have an idea where this is going. Eventually, they're probably going to have to change it just because of pressure.
Snyder says he's going to hold firm.
I give him credit for standing by what he believes in. You know, if people are slighted by that, you know, I understand that point of view. And that's, you know, it's, look, if the league wants to do something about it, and if it is truly demeaning, then eventually they will. But, you know, where was all this 20 years ago?
Oh, maybe, I mean, I don't know. Maybe there's just wasn't the organization to, you know, protest. Maybe there wasn't that impetus. I mean, certainly there have been demeaning things over the years that time has changed, and we look back now and say, how could they have used that word in commonplace everyday
life? I just know that, you know, I've got some very good friends. One of the best men in my wedding years ago, Mike Colonna, full-blooded Navajo Indian. I used to conduct camps on the Navajo Indian Reservation. Very good friends with Charles Blacksheep, Mike Deswood. They're all full-blooded Navajo, spent a lot of time on the Navajo Indian Reservation, and never once did they ever say anything to me that they felt that that term was demeaning. And they knew that I was, you know, a National Football League player. They knew that I grew up a Redskins fan, and never once was that ever brought up in conversation.
I just speak from personal experience. You think, though, that just reading the tea leaves eventually, it's heading down that road?
Yeah, probably.
Yeah. By the way, we've got tickets to the Axemen taking on the Philadelphia Fight this Saturday.
Saturday, and actually I talked to Spinner last night on my show and found out that New Zealand's actually here, one of their teams, and we're going to have what he termed a Barbarians match. Only rugby would have something called a Barbarians match, but it's going to be USA versus New Zealand. That's going to be at 5 o'clock on Saturday night leading up to the championship game between Jacksonville and Philadelphia. The tickets that we're giving away get you in for both. It starts at 5 o'clock. Championship game is at 7 on Saturday at UNF.
If you'd like a pair of tickets, we'll leave your name on the will call list. Just be the third caller at 641-1010. I cannot confirm or deny whether there will be spiked clubs and maces and I don't know what goes on in the Barbarians match. Maybe probably nothing different than what goes on under the pile in an NFL game, I'm guessing.
What do they call that, a scrum? In rugby?
They have a scrum, yeah.
They have a scrum?
Yeah.
When they all knot up there.
Yeah, I've always called, to me, in football, a scrum is when the ball is on the ground and then everybody jumps on the pile to try to, you know, figure out who's going to gain control of it. I always call that a scrum. Gus Bradley calls it a dog pile, which, by the way, we talked about that on the Gus Bradley show last week. Just another plug.
Absolutely. Give us more plugs. Tell us when we can catch the Gus Bradley show and everything else Jeff Logman does.
Here. We're actually, with Gus this week, we're going to sit down and look at some of the plays with Luke Bowanko, Brandon Linder, on the field at the same time. So for the Gus Bradley show, which will air, I believe it's going to air, maybe Thursday night. I'm not positive on that, but it's not, you know, the Gus Bradley show during the regular season will air Saturday nights and I think re-air again on Sunday mornings, but with the preseason schedule being a little bit out of whack, it's going to air before the game against the Detroit Lions.
Okay.
And we're going to look at, I think I've got five plays of looking at these young players at the interior of the offensive line.
Breaking it down.
Breaking it down with Gus.
Love it. Breaking it down
with Gus. That's a new feature with Gus. You know, last year it was just me, you know, breaking down film for the Gus Bradley show, and it's been great. Gus has excited about, you know, raising the bar on his own television show and wants to participate in this. And so it's fun to sit down and watch film with him.
You know what's going to happen?
He trusts me with the remote.
You know what's going to happen? Jack's going to make a surprise run to the playoffs in his second year, a la, you know, Tom Coughlin, and he's going to turn into a raging, you know what, instead of being this accommodating guy. He's going to do the complete Coughlin flip.
Nah, he won't change.
Nah, I don't think so either. I don't think so either. But, I mean, look, you haven't worked with that many head coaches in the National Football League, but you worked with a few. He really seems, I don't know if, I know it's part of the job description. I think Shad Khan probably made that clear that you're more than just a coach. And Gus emphasizes that.
That's the way it is league-wide, though.
But he really seems to enjoy that. It's not a burden, it doesn't seem like, to him. It seems like a natural thing that he enjoys engaging people on a, you know, just as you said, he wants to take his show to a higher level. He just doesn't want to mail it in.
No, he's fantastic. A lot of people ask me how he is, and I tell them, what do you think when you see him on TV? And they think, we think he's great. I said, I can tell you, he's exactly that way in person. He's great. He's great to work with. He's great to get to know. He's actually a pretty good fisherman. So me and him get along pretty well.
I cannot confirm or deny whether he said hello to me yesterday during practice, because that is embargoed information right now. I cannot tell you what took place yesterday during practice, but you guess for yourself. All right, 641-1010, we'll leave the phone lines open. We will come back, and Jeff Logman's going to tell you what he'd like to see from the Jacksonville Jaguars. What are the things that this team needs to see to have confidence in themselves in the final kind of dress rehearsal game before the opener against Philadelphia, even though a fourth preseason game in the offing doesn't mean all the starters are going to play. We'll discuss that coming up next. Jeff Logman, Fat Tony, Mike Dempsey here with you. It is Jaguars Today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
Yeah, I think so. You get to play a little bit more time out there. You want to get established again on offense, moving the ball, score some points, and, you know, get your work in.
That's Chad Henne talking about the importance is a little bit more important week three in the preseason. Jeff also referred to as the dress rehearsal. Gus Bradley talking about this after practice yesterday, so we're allowed to discuss this. And I think he talked about this a little bit on Sunday as well. They don't want to go to a situation like he had Cleveland last night where Hoyer, then they put Manziel in for a drive or two, then they went back to Hoyer. He wants
that
to play Henne and then move on to Bortles at whatever point in time that is. Now, typically, your starting quarterback will play into the third quarter. You play a half and maybe the first series of the third quarter. Gus says the plan has not been finalized yet, but there was certainly some conversation yesterday in the press conference about maybe Henne plays a quarter and a half, and then Bortles comes in and plays the remainder of that quarter and the third quarter. And he, you know, something along those lines. How would you split it up? How would you handle it?
Well, I definitely think you don't do it like Mike Pettine did with the Cleveland Browns last night, where you have one guy come in and then Johnny Manziel comes in for a bit and then he comes out and you put the other guy back in. I mean, playing a game at the quarterback position, or for any position for that matter, is really, it's about rhythm and finding, you know, a comfort zone while you're on the field. Never liked that style of decision making. But I mean, for this week, I think it'd be smart to allow Chad to play into the second quarter. Depending on the number of snaps, how far will determine that. You know, as far as how many snaps, like last week, you know,
he had a bunch early.
Chicago Bears. I mean, he had like 31 snaps, and then all of a sudden,
they had
then
three
he put
snaps in the first quarter, and the Jags had the ball the rest of the time.
Yeah, so I mean, a lot of that's going to be dependent upon how many snaps Chad has offensively. But then, you know, get the reps to Blake. I think early second quarter would be fine. As long as Chad gets a good, you know, 20, 25 snaps, you know, whatever it may be in the first quarter, 15 snaps in the first quarter. You know, because you know what Chad can do. You know, and he's getting a lot of reps in practice.
Does he not need any more then? I mean, plays that, would he need to play in week four of the preseason at all, in your mind?
Yeah. I mean, he still plays.
You still play a quarter?
Yeah. Still play quarter. You know, just kind of, and the reason I say that is because where have the wide receivers been?
You know, sure, I mean, he hadn't had a chance to work with.
I mean,
those guys.
You got to work with those guys. You know, so I think that because of the wide receiver situation, maybe you're not quite worried about making the third preseason game the only last tune-up for Chad Henne. You'll have a little bit of opportunity in preseason game number four because of the wide receiver
for timing and
lack
stuff
of,
like that.
Lack
yeah.
of playing, you know,
because you're not going to be going up against the ones the whole time either. The Atlanta may rest some of their guys, what have you.
Yeah, and I wonder how Atlanta's approach will be, because their approach last year and the year before that was they sat a ton of guys in preseason game number four. Well, last year they had a bad year. They've got a lot of new components to their offense. and particularly their defense, I would not be surprised if Smitty ends up playing his starters in game four.
See what he had to say about his team and being soft? He said, you know, I'm paraphrasing here, but we've had a reputation for too long of being soft, and that's got to end. And basically, almost like, you know what, even if we have to take some penalties to prove it, we're going to stand up for each other. We're going to do, you know, that I don't think you do. If you really don't feel like your team is soft, do you need to make that statement to your team, and do you need to do it publicly?
I'm not a big fan of making any kind of statement publicly, about your team like that.
Right.
But I mean, challenging them, you know, in the privacy of a team meeting room, absolutely. You know, see how they react. You know, see who's going to step up. But the greatest solution to finding or to making a football team not soft is finding players that aren't soft.
Right.
Right?
I mean, you know, that way you don't have to make them something that they're not.
I mean, you know, he changed his offensive line coach, I think. He's got Mike Tice there now.
Yes, he does. And Tice was, I don't see Hard Knocks, but apparently he's encouraging fights at the drop of a hat, is from what I understand.
Changed his defensive line coach, I think, also, you know, to kind of get more of an edge there. But, you know, hey, look, you know, if you get tougher players and more competitive situations, it's amazing how that changes.
Matt Ryan's got that squeaky voice. I don't know if you can ever seen Tough Tony with the squeaky voice.
I'm not a big believer in him.
I don't love it. You know, I think he's good. He's better than a lot of people.
He's not anywhere near elite.
I agree with you.
You got Julio Jones and Roddy White.
Right. And you had Tony Gonzalez.
And one heck of a running back and, the guy that.
They had Turner, Michael Turner. Several years. It was pretty good there. And, last year the running game fell to nothing, and you know Julio was out. I mean, they had a lot of issues last year, but
but Matt Ryan didn't make anybody better last year.
When he
lost his guys, he didn't make anybody better.
I'm with you on that. You know, he's not in that category. He's not even just that next cut below in my mind.
Yeah, he's in the second group somewhere.
You think so? You think he's in that? Because to
the
me,
bottom of the second group.
If you've got Manning, Brady, Breeze, Rodgers, consensus top four,
no doubt.
Okay. The next group to me has got to start with a guy like Roethlisberger. Okay.
Luck.
Roethlisberger.
Luck's pushing. Is Ryan in that group? I think he's even maybe a cut below.
Yeah,
that
he's
group.
At the bottom of that second group, maybe top of the third. Yeah.
Okay.
I'd rank him somewhere around 12 to 15 quarterbacks in the league.
Then that's a pretty deep second group for you.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I would probably be a little bit more exclusive. I think that, you know, that group's probably about four deep as well. But regardless.
That's fair.
Let's look at offensively what you want to see. We talked a little bit about the QBs you want to see. Obviously, get some timing in. We're going to see Cecil Shorts play. How much do you think we'll see Cecil Shorts play?
Well, probably not a whole lot. You know, probably, you know, 8 to 10 plays, maybe tops, you know, with Cecil, just allow him to, you know, to go through pregame warmups, feel the game tempo, run some routes at full speed, take a hit or two, and then get him out of there. You know, he's not going to need a ton of time, but the offensive line, you know, that's where you're going to need something to start gelling. You know, particularly up in the interior. Then there's certain components of the offense that you're not going to see. You're not going to see Allen Robinson. You're not going to see Clay Harbor, who I think is a critical component to this offense. He provides his offense with a great middle, vertical threat. I think he was having a tremendous training camp.
He really,
tremendous.
Yeah, he was making a lot of plays out there.
Improved as a blocker. Looked like he got in better condition, a little bit bigger. But you know, I'm continuing to really enjoy watching Allen Hurns. I think this guy has taken advantage of a great situation for him. You know, you got Ace Sanders who, you know, doesn't come to camp because he's taking care of personal issues. You get an injury to Cecil Shorts, an injury to Marquise Lee, also a little bit there for a while. Mike Brown missed a little bit of time. Tandon Dawson and here and all.
You had seven guys out at one
all point. Allen Hurns has done has played and played well.
Yeah.
And that third and eight at Chicago, to where Chad Henne threw a great ball because he threw the ball before even Allen Hurns was out of his break, and I showed it last night on television. That to me was a great play by him because he kind of double caught it, but still made the catch and then immediately turned up the field. Great awareness for the down and distance for him, knowing that where his route was at when he catches the ball, he doesn't have the first down, and he's got to make something happen quick to get the first down. It was a great play by him. I think he's a very polished, more veteran-like rookie wide receiver and very surprised that he went undrafted, because when I watched his college tape, I saw a guy that did everything well, but never anything great.
And I think Gus mentioned this yesterday. Certainly the familiarity with Jed Fish and Jed Fish's familiarity with him at Miami. And Gus said he likened it to the Senior Bowl. You know what? Mm-hmm. You practice with these guys. You coach these guys for a week. Maybe you're a little bit more inclined because you feel like you have a bit better insight. Even though the same things may show up on tape for two different players, if you know this guy, you're more inclined to take a chance on him, and it worked out well for both parties.
Well, and you hope that, you know, you got three guys that are all in their same year, Allen Hurns, Allen Robinson, and Marquise Lee, that you can develop that friendly, competitive position group. You know, much like you had with Keenan and Jimmy here. And I'm not saying that they have to play at the level that Jimmy and Keenan did, but if you have three guys in their same year that are very competitive and are fighting for playing time and to get on the field, that's a great situation to have.
Jeff Loggeman's the general manager. Where are you on, you know, giving a contract to Cecil Shorts? I know there had been some talk earlier this summer. They'd like to extend him. How do you weigh his, you know, soft tissue injuries? He had a bit of a concussion history. How do you weigh all that versus what he gives you when he is healthy?
I think it has to be a factor.
Do you wait to see how the season plays out? Do you let it go or?
Well, I think if I'm the general manager, I'm trying to get the contract done now at a very, very good rate for the team. You know, will his representation and will Cecil, you know, bite on that?
And that's the gamble.
I
mean, it's a gamble for Cecil too.
Sure it is.
Right? Because if he doesn't prove he can stay healthy for 16 games or close to 16 games, that may be a better offer than he ends up getting.
I will say that I like the idea of having Cecil be the veteran guy in that room. You couldn't ask for a better example to have leading that position group. Great practice habits, great person, does everything right the right way, on and off the field. Isn't that what you want? I mean, in a perfect world, you would have somebody like that leading each meeting
position
room.
Group, right.
Absolutely.
And you've got a guy who came in.
Now, you're not willing to overpay.
Right.
Because of those factors.
But he comes in as a guy who people had written off because he does nothing his rookie year, and he showed perseverance and, you know, attaching himself to the right people and the desire to get better, going to Larry Fitzgerald's camps, those kind of things. I think all play into exactly what you're talking about.
And he's extremely coachable. And when you have a veteran guy or the older guy in the room, because I love not only Cecil, but Mike Brown, because I think Mike Brown is a great example for these young wide receivers, even though Mike Brown is still young himself. Those two guys, I think, provide a great example to a room. And if you had that in every room as a coach, you'd be thrilled. You know, you'll never get that, but you'd like to have it.
When you look at the offensive line situation the way it is right now, do you think early in the season, particularly because they're not going to be at full strength with Allen Robinson, we don't know what his timetable is, and we know Ace Sanders is going to be out. We don't know what Tanner Doss's timetable, although Sunday he's out there without a wrap on his ankle, so that's a good sign. But do you think we'll see more two tight end early in the season to kind of both to protect the offensive line? And
no.
You know,
that's not Jed Fish's style. You know, I mean,
but sometimes you have to adjust based on,
you know, who's
going to
be the
right?
Be the second tight end.
Barden, maybe. Barden is no. He's all right. You tell me. I mean, what's the tight end pecking order right now?
I think the tight end will be a position that will be looked at very closely off the waiver wire. You know, because
you think Mercedes
and Clay Harbor. And that, I mean, after those two guys, I mean, what else you got?
All right, Marcel Jensen as Gus. You know, talked about, let's see when the pads come on. He was a summer sensation.
Been okay.
Right, when there were no pads on.
Yeah, he's been okay. Well, without pads, the guy's got great hands. Great hands, got great size.
So you think it's an uphill climb for Barden?
Speaking of Marcel Jensen, I mean, to me, he's a practice squad guy.
Mm-hmm.
Barden, I mean, just, he's a guy.
Okay.
I think you could probably get a little bit better, maybe off the waiver wire. Talavea, guy that has got size, doesn't run very good, doesn't have great hands, probably doesn't quite bend his knees enough in the blocking. I mean, you know, I mean, to me, that might be a position that you look at very, very strongly. And I don't see Jed Fish going to two or three tight ends early in the season because of the wide receiver group. I don't see it.
Well, I wasn't suggesting like the full house backfield, but yeah. I, you know, just a little.
Hey, look, as long as you got one tight end and foe, you're good.
Okay.
Because I think the Jaguars have one of the best fullbacks in the National Football League in Will Tofoe. I think he's a fantastic player. He's an excellent blocker. He's got good hands out of the backfield, and he's a special teams demon. I mean, I got a lot of respect for Tofoe because, you know, when Greg Jones was here and everybody was freaking out about Greg going, I was sitting there going, it's okay because you got Foe. He's fine. I mean, this guy, he's tough now.
Going to class with Jeff Logman every Tuesday on Jaguars Today. Absolutely love it. You can go to the Facebook page, get into the latest photo contest put on by Foundation Professionals of Florida this week and probably extend it through next week as well. We're looking for your tricked out Jaguar motif vehicle. Show us your most decorated vehicle in Jaguar motif, and the best one or two we'll throw into the drawing for a pair of tickets to the home opener, Jags and Colts, week three of the regular season. Foundation Professionals of Florida, they feel like you, the fan base, are the foundation of the organization. Likewise, they know that the foundation is critical for your most important investment, your home. If it is not solid, you're going to have issues down the road. Let Foundation Professionals give you the peace of mind that your home is safe. They'll even work with your insurance company if financing is available. Of course, they're licensed and insured. 287-2690 for Foundation Professionals of Florida, or visit them online at foundationprosfl.com. When we return, take a look at some of your responses to the fan feedback spotlight. Ask Jeff what he's looking for on the defensive side of the football as the Jags go up against Detroit on Friday night. Mike Dempsey, Jeff Loggeman, Fat Tony here with you. Jaguars Today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM. All right, here we go. Coming down the home stretch, Jaguars Today, Mike Dempsey, Jeff Loggeman, Fat Tony here with you, 1010XL, 92.5 FM, at the Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute Studios. Of course, game day on Friday this week as the Jags continue their march through the preseason. And game day Saturday for the Jacksonville Axemen, U.S. Rugby League Championship. Another pair of tickets will be giving them away all week long here on Jaguars Today. Third caller at 641-1010. It's that easy. Give your name to Lauren. She'll put you on the will call guest list, and your tickets will be waiting for you at Hodges Stadium this Saturday. Gates open at 5, Tony?
Yeah, Saturday? For the Barbarians match.
Barbarians match.
Between New Zealand and the USA.
You definitely want to get there for the Barbarians match, the tune-up to the Rugby League Championship. But today we asked you in the Tom Bush Fan Feedback Spotlight, kind of one that's impossible to answer until we, you know, it's not impossible to answer, but who knows which answer will be closest to being correct. What do you expect production-wise from Toby Gerhart this season in terms of yardage and rushing touchdowns? Before you get to yours, Tony, I got this one in, Jeff, on Facebook from Chris Brown. He said, not enough, because that O-line looks to be very subpar, hashtag Jaguars Today. More of a concern, the run blocking or the pass blocking for you right now in the preseason?
I think the pass blocking has actually been pretty good. And that's typically the hardest to deal with. So the run blocking is something that it takes time, you know, because it's a pad level thing and it's a live thing sometimes. And cut blocking, you're not doing it in training camp. You're in pads a limited amount of time. So I think that that's something that typically takes a little bit longer. Back in the old days, you know, that was something that came out of the gate ready to roll.
Right.
You know, 'cause you're in 2 days full pads and getting after it. And, but now with the limited amount of practice time, the limited amount of hitting, it takes time.
Is that
and that's okay.
I mean, Jed Fish wants to, he told us the number 58% run, 42% pass.
Well, in a perfect world.
In a perfect world, though,
yeah.
But I mean, until,
you're 70% run, because, you know, you're
100% run.
Big plays, you can run a 4 minute offense.
Perfect world, you're returning every kickoff for a touchdown, you don't have to run a play.
That's right.
But for a team that wants to run it as much as he does, I mean, early in the season, are you concerned with how effective this run game may or may not be?
No, I think it's going to be fine, and I think it's going to get better, you know, as they get into the season and this offensive line, you know, it settles down. They get settled at the position of center and right guard. I think it's going to be fine. I think we'll see a big improvement this week, and it's a challenging test. You know, Ndamukong Suh, Nick Fairley, C.J. Mosley, that's a pretty good group. Jimmy Jones at one defensive end. Ezekiel Anza, I think, is expected to play. So Stephen Tulloch, middle linebacker. I mean, this is a pretty stout group.
On paper, they have one of the best front fours,
yeah.
Right, in the National Football League.
Well, Nick Fairley's not that good.
Well, I was going to ask you, what's the deal with Nick Fairley?
He's fat.
Is he unmotivated or in a contract year? How do you get fat?
I have no idea. I mean, you know, hey, look, I've never been one of those guys that said, hey, look, you know, it's contract year. Let me get going. You know,
do you remember watching him coming out?
But daggum, if that doesn't motivate you, I don't know what does.
You remember watching him at Auburn? Did you watch any?
Yeah,
of
he was all right.
He was
good. He was always a good player at college
the time,
level.
He was, yeah, right. He was a dominant player in college.
Yeah, the best, you know, one of the best defensive tackles is the guy that we saw in preseason game number one, McCoy.
Yeah.
Guy's a beast. You know, and Ndamukong Suh, I like him. He's big, he's strong, he's tough. But I never really saw him get better a lot. I mean, he's got a little bit better, don't get me wrong. But he's never, you know, climbed the mountain of getting better every year in his pro career. You know, he was really good his rookie year, and then he got a little bit better over since then. Whereas McCoy, he's a beast. He can dominate a game.
Tony, give us a range of some of the replies today, what people are expecting from Toby Gerhart. You don't have to quote chapter and verse on every, you know, exact yardage, but
no.
What are we looking at?
Sure, and I don't know if you saw this, but McCoy got another sack week two. He got another one against Miami in just like a quarter of action. So.
And he's got Joe Cullen coaching him now. The Rushman coach, former Jaguars Rushman coach, defensive line coach.
Christoph said on Twitter, over 700 yards and 10 touchdowns will be Mike Allstott version 2, hashtag Jaguars today. From Eric, we got...
They're looking for more than Mike Allstott version 2, by the way.
No kidding. They don't want a fullback playing running back. 1,100 yards, basically 8 touchdowns plus 43 receptions, hashtag I don't know, hashtag random number.
Nobody does!
Hashtag hash browns, hashtag Jaguars today, hashtag shut up Randy. Got a lot going there with the hashtags. From Ray, we got if he stays healthy, he will have 800 plus yards and 7 touchdowns this year for the Jags. Hashtag Jaguars today. From Tony, we got 950 yards and 14 touchdowns. Hashtag Jaguars today. From Pete, we got for Toby, I visualized John Riggins, Natron Means, Allstott. Hashtag six yards and a cloud of pain.
I like
hashtag
that.
Hashtag Jaguars
that's good.
Today.
That's good.
And finally from Josh, we got 1,234 yards, 13 touchdowns. Hashtag Jaguars today. Hashtag Johnny Birdmanzel. Hashtag any given Sunday. Hashtag no more hashtags.
There's a lot of hashtags going on there. Yeah. I like 6 yards in a cloud of pain. You, sir, if you haven't won in the last 30 days, win yourself a Jaguars Today t-shirt.
He'll be a little over 1,000 yard back.
Is that what you think?
Yeah.
1,000 yards? And yeah. Look, if he scores 14 touchdowns, his team would do backflips, wouldn't he?
Yeah, I don't think he's going to get that many touchdowns, but I think he's going to be about 1,000 yard back. You know, good steady guy, you know, average, you know, 4 yards a carry, 3.9 yards a carry with his offensive line while they're developing. You know, and that's good. That's going to provide this team some balance.
How, and I want to get to the defense here in the last few minutes, but what do you see throughout the course of a game? You hit him early with Gerhart, you mix him up with...
That's not Jed's style. I mean, Jed's style is to just open it up and keep people off balance. And I think that's what he does best. You know, of quick throws, and that really is essentially another ground game to keep people off balance, and I think that's good. I mean, Chad Henne can handle it. He's a veteran guy. You got a lot of receiving options and allow Toby to be kind of an off-balance guy.
How much a part of the game plan is Denard Robinson? On a week to, is it depending on week to week, or what are you looking at, number of touches?
That's probably one of the great questions going forward, is what role will Denard Robinson have offensively? Because Todman's right now is probably showing that he might be a little bit more ready to be the backup running back, but, you know, hey, look, Denard has shown that he can catch the ball, you know, this year. And then he's an excellent open field runner. He's got speed, you know, so it's going to be, you know, Jed's got a little bit of a quandary. You know, who is he going to get the ball to?
Right.
You know, Marquise Lee, Cecil Shorts.
That's good.
That's
though.
A good thing.
Yeah, that's
a
real
good thing.
It's a tough thing if you're trying to game plan against that. Let's talk about the other side of the football now. We were talking on the break here. Just give us your thoughts on the Otto linebacker position. Leroy Reynolds has been holding it down in Dakota Watson's absence. Dakota Watson's back now.
I like Leroy Reynolds. I think he's doing a very good job. I think he's probably better suited to play the Will position or the Mike position. Probably Mike being the best, which is where Posluszny is at, a true middle linebacker. You know, but Dakota Watson, to me, watching him on film when he played for the Bucs and he had limited exposure there in Tampa because he wasn't the starter, he's got great speed, he's got instincts, he's got a little bit better height, weight, size, you know. He's definitely suited to play that auto position. Now, I don't know at what level he's going to be able to get back to coming back from a groin hernia, whatever it was, surgery. Man, I had a hernia surgery before, came back from it. It didn't impact me at all, but his surgery, I think, was a little bit different than what I had. So, you know, I think that he is going to be a huge upgrade. And it would allow Leroy Reynolds, and I think it's great that Leroy got some exposure to play that auto position, because I think he can step right in and play the other ones, which he did last year. So it's going to be nice. It's when you have those things happen in training camp, sometimes they work out to the benefit, because down down the road long term, you're going to have to play guys in different positions.
What does your nickel defense look like for this football team, right? Because your Otto, you want to be somewhat of a pass rusher.
Well, your Otto is, your Otto's out.
Your Otto's out. So it'll be Puzlowski and Telvin Smith.
Yeah.
On the field.
That's right.
In that situation.
Your Otto's out when you go to nickel. And, right now, Dakota Watson, with the limited reps that he's had because of the injury, he hasn't earned the right to be a rusher, but which is basically the Otto's off the field when you go to nickel because there is no Otto. It's a nickel now. And so he would have to end up being as either one of the four down guys, and that's it.
Which he's not going to be with this group.
I mean, who's he going to replace? Clemens?
Right.
Branch, who, by the way, I want to see more of. I didn't think he did much last week against Chicago Bears. He only had like 7 snaps, I think.
He on the bubble?
Week one. No, he's not on the bubble. And I think they feel pretty good about him. And he had an excellent offseason. He's had an excellent training camp. But the production hasn't been there in 2 games, and you want to see some more of him in this game against Detroit and see him do something.
What's the number? What do you think in terms of keeping defensive linemen?
Could be 10.
So you got Red Bryant, you got Miller, you got Marks, you got Clemens up mm-hmm. front, right? You got Alawalu, mm-hmm. You got Ziggy Hood, Andre Branch, Avery Jones, Ryan Davis, mm-hmm. Chris Smith.
Chris Smith, that's 10.
That's your 10?
Yep.
Right now, okay.
Yep.
All right.
You know, I want to see more out of Ziggy Hood. You know, I mean, what I've seen so far, is he a guy that's worth $4.5-5 million a year? What did they pay him? You know, something like that.
Is it that much?
I think it's like $4 million a year, somewhere in that ballpark.
Tony will get that number for us here in a second.
You know, which, you know, I mean, $4 million a year is not an elite pay, you know, but I haven't seen, I mean, I've seen a few flashes here and there out of him, but I want to see some more consistency out of him. The guy that I'm excited about is Avery Jones. I mean, to watch where he was at last year to where he is at this year, he's a heck of a football player, and he can play multiple positions. He could play the strong side defensive end where Red is at and Tyson are at. He could play the 3 with Senderic. He could play the nose with Roy Miller. I mean, if you had to make a decision, okay, we're only going to be allowed to keep 3 defensive tackles, okay? Roy Miller's one of them. Senderic Marks is one of them. So the decision would come down to, do you keep Avery Jones or Ziggy Hood? I'm keeping Avery Jones.
Ziggy Hood, 4-year deal, $16 million, 5.5 guaranteed.
Yeah.
So.
Now he's going to be on the team.
Right, he's on the team. With that, I understand what you're saying, though. You want to see more out of
Ziggy Hood. I want to see more
Ziggy Hood at this point in time. What about that back line of the defense? Loved the physical play of Dwayne Grotz last week, coming up in run support.
Yeah.
Love to see that.
Good player.
We know Sipp and Winston Guy, I think, at this point. I mean, where's Josh Evans in terms of making this football team?
He plays special teams very well. He can play either safety position. He's got value. The interesting thing is, who's going to be the fourth safety, and will there be a fourth safety? You know, is it Chris Przinski? Is it Joe Young? I think it's going to come down to one of those two guys. Sherrod Martin's a veteran guy who was a heck of a player in Carolina before the injury that he had there, has not shown anything like that. So I think it comes down to Joe Young, who doesn't have quite as much speed as Chris Przinski. So those two guys, I think, are in a little bit of a battle.
Gus Bradley show coming up this week, radio and TV, right?
Yeah, we have it all going on right now, man. So it's like trying to keep track of the schedule.
I love to get you first. I love to get him on Tuesday mornings, Tony. We get a little loggy right after he breaks down the film. It's going to be, we keep saying it's going to be particularly fun during the season. You'll have that fresh look at the film on Monday and kind of break it down on Tuesday morning.
One thing to add here, you know, we know who the starting corners are. I mean, Alan Ball and Dwayne Gross are fantastic players. I mean, they're a good corner combo, Will Blackman being a backup, Demetrius McCray. But what happens behind that? That's where it is very intriguing to me, you know, because you've got guys like Jeremy Harris,
right.
Mike Harris, Rashad Reynolds, the undrafted guy from Oregon State, all in there, as well as Jamel Fleming. And so, I mean, I think all those guys are probably battling for one, maybe 2 spots, depending on the number of safeties that you keep. And I really like Rashad Reynolds. Watch him. I mean, number 40 can play now.
He seems to have flashed on special teams a little bit, too.
Which is where you got to make it.
Yeah.
Right, if you're going to be in that position.
Remember our conversation last week? First thing that I watched
is
special teams.
First thing you watch is special teams. Right.
Rashad Reynolds can play.
All right. Jeff Logman can break it down, ladies and gentlemen. Love it. I go to class every Tuesday morning. You can as well with Loggy right here on Jaguars Today. Jeff, Appreciate it, man.
Enjoyed it.
Have a good week. Have a good trip to Detroit. We'll do it again next Tuesday.
I loved it.
All right, there he goes. And Fat Tony as well. Lauren Brooks back at the studio. Joe Fortunato on campus here with us in the Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute studios. That will do it for us. Thanks to all the fantastic sponsors out there. Go check out on the Jaguars Today Facebook page, if you haven't already, my video for the ALS Challenge, and keep Frangie's feet to the fire.